I feel like this. That might be a little much. Just a skosh over the line for me.
I don't. There is no line.
That sounds like that's something that Bill Maher or somebody said.
Probably.
Teresa, the Bill Maher of AE Double Back.
Oh my God, that is not the reputation I want.
Oh, Teresa's gonna have to go looking for her dignity again.
Oh God.
Welcome to AE Double Back. The show is just flat out mean. Just flat out mean to itself.
And that's, statistically, that's
to like, me. To me.
It really could have been anyone else, I guess only, you know, only me, that Chan could be repeatedly compromising by when he times the recording starting.
You know, yeah.
Here's the thing. If I say something and then I hit the music, then it sounds like I'm just, it's like I'm editing my own scene. You know, like,
So you're just trying to give yourself an excuse for being a dick.
Oh, God.
That's my entire life. That is all I do. AEW back for
is not on brand.
Fyter Fest.
Wednesday, July 14th, 2021, Fyter Fest Night 1. We had to record it a little late, so Teresa was messaging us, "This is the best show ever."
Yeah.
Her mistake, because Chan was forewarned to put up his defenses and not let Joy in.
That's true. I shouldn't have said anything.
I don't know why you did. You know that's what that's going to do.
Because I couldn't help myself. I was having the best fucking time. And I didn't, like, Caller was on a shoot, so he couldn't watch yet. And I didn't want to give anything away. Because I need you to enjoy it on your own time.
Yeah.
I was busy getting spoiled for the outcome of the NBA Finals Game 4, which I give a thumbs down.
I thought you were going to say Loki, and I'm realizing now how different we are as human beings.
In all sincerity and compassion, I do not give a shit about the plot of Loki.
Fair enough. Let's do the Shop AEW front page first off.
Let's do that first, because there's some incredible shit there. Okay, so two things right away that are from last week: Jericho God of War and Young Bucks EVPs. Now, they weren't available last week, but at least I don't think so. But they're from things that started last week and I guess are new. Actually, EVP might have already been there. I don't remember now.
I don't remember seeing that.
I don't either. Yeah. So those are new. They look neat.
Jericho's looks like an 80s metal cover. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's exactly what they're going for. So like they nailed it and it's fine.
Jericho himself is an 80s metal cover, is he not?
Yeah, exactly.
It's fine. But here's where it starts getting good. Abaddon, the Living Dead Girl. I really like this shirt.
That's a really good shirt.
That's got a sort of like like maybe late 80s, early 90s splatterpunk kind of vibe.
Yes.
To it.
It feels like it would have come out at exactly the moment that Spawn was at its peak.
Yeah.
That time when all the movies like started with those kinds of credit sequences that Spawn had, where it's the fire and it's the lettering that is like
right,
yeah. So that it really is a super strong shirt. I like it a lot.
But then it gets even better with Thunder Rosa's shirt. I really like the shirt. I really like it. I haven't liked her other ones as much on AEW.
I like it, but I want it to pop more off the shirt, because it's a red shirt and like her face is red. I would like that. I would like her red face to be on like a black shirt, maybe like a white shirt.
Yeah, what I feel like it would be nice to have it do, and you don't want to do what other people have done, I guess. But and it doesn't have to be this version of her, but like had it been the bloody faced Thunder Rosa over a different color, that would have been super cool. or yeah, like if it had just been like her not bloody, but with her like her regular face coloring over, I don't know, still red would have been okay, I guess. But you know, black is usually the best color.
I don't know. I really like it.
Skulls and Roses are great. Yeah,
I like that it sort of looks very seamless to me. Mm-hmm. And what does pop is her name, and it's like, yeah. I don't know. I really like it.
It is a real good look.
It's a good shirt, and it doesn't end there either.
Mm-mm. No, it doesn't, because then we have a Street Fighter shirt, which is limited edition, official Capcom and Nerds Clothing collaboration. It's only available until July 21st, and it's Sheeta versus Cammy. You've got to look at it.
It looks great, and I love the idea. And the only thing that troubles me is like it's just Sheeta against just Cammy, and I was like, they should like Sheeta should be as someone, and someone should be as Cammy.
They've done other shirts in this series, and it's been the same way. It's been like Kenny Omega versus Ryu or something like that. I'm not sure which, but like this is an established thing. I love it. I don't like that a normal shirt is $25 and this one's $38. 38 is a limited lot for edition, just a
yeah. It's those ones I've noticed are always more. That one is maybe even more than the normal.
More.
I wonder if it's like they go to an entirely different print house for this.
They go to the good one for this one.
Yeah. It says of imported fabric or material.
We don't made in Chicago. We don't normally go to the one that's all the way down in Marina Del Rey because, you know, like we don't want to what a hassle. Am I right? Normally we just go to the crummy one that's nearby.
Yeah.
It is a wonderful shirt, but it's a good shirt.
It looks good. I would like to like. It seems like the kind of one where the texture of it might be super cool as well. Not necessarily like so different, but it almost looks like a silk screen or something like that.
All right, so let's get into the night. It's Fighter Fest.
Oh, I'm sorry. Like there was one last like merchandising thing that I wanted to get in there to help our dear friends at AEW during the show. And this just feels like the best time to talk about it. They promoted something new, an AEW loot crate.
Did they? Did I miss that?
Yeah, they.
Shit, I don't remember that.
Yeah, like at some point they popped it up on the screen and mentioned it, like in the course of their normal advertising, which is why you might have tuned it out. But like they're gonna do a randomized monthly loot crate for like $37 a month.
What?
Yeah.
All right. Dude. That's
That's interesting. That is interesting.
It's a lot of money, but like you imagine you're probably getting a shirt every month.
Yeah, maybe one of the brand new ones every month or the least popular.
Yeah, he cannot give away the – I was trying to think of who I felt comfortable defaming.
Yeah, we don't want to defame anybody around here.
But I was like, that is, if it was a little less than that, it would seem like a slam dunk. At that price, I'm like, I feel like I'm going to want to buy, at some point, I'm going to shoot my shot. I'm going to get a shirt and then I'm going to be like, all right, every time we go to the Cinemark, for a pay-per-view or we go to a live event, I'm going to have my one shirt and I'm not going to want to be the guy that is always popping on a new wrestling print tee. I want to have one. So I'm like, what am I going to do with all the piles of stuff that keep showing up later that are going to include bobbleheads of wrestlers I don't know and stuff like that?
It would be interesting if we started our own weird little raffle then. If we had piles of wrestling shirts, then we could have listeners like receive them for –
So
reasons
what you're saying
no
is
reasons.
We get the crates, we take the stuff that we want. Like I'm looking it up. It's quarterly. two shirts per box. So if there's like a good shirt and one crappy one, they're like, hey, everybody, who wants to win a crappy AEW shirt?
That'd be fun. Turn all your household rags into cool wrestling rags.
All right. We got a plan. We're going to make this happen. Let's talk about the show.
Like every time you need to like adjust your fireplace with the poker, you wrap the shitty AEW shirt around the handle to make sure you don't burn.
Stay on brand.
Look, there's you also get an autographed 8x10 in every box. So cool. You know, if there's like a spider that you need to squash, just roll that thing up and just pam.
Or
you want to hide the cracks in your wall from all the earthquakes in California?
If you realize you have a bloody nose and you need to put something under the drops to not ruin your carpet.
Yeah.
Decide what on wallpaper. Just paper your walls with these autographed 8x10s.
Yeah, a million uses.
But yeah, that'd be, I mean, it sounds neat. I mean, of all the loot crates I've received in my life, which are many.
Really?
Oh yeah, I'm the queen of I'll sign up. Why not?
The subscription boxes are pretty quotes. Awesome.
What?
Like it's a present that shows up at your house just out of the blue. On a regular basis.
With all kinds of goodies.
I won't judge you because I sign up for every streaming site that I find out about.
Go
ahead.
I do, like, I would have anxiety about the unknown of every box. I'd be like, oh my God, I'm going to feel like the world's biggest fool.
But if some I get boxes a shitty... are like the most amazing things ever. You know, like I signed up for the Nick box when it first started. And for a while there, it was like unreal how cool the shit was. And then...
Wait a minute, back up. The Nick box?
Nickelodeon box.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was...
a box devoted to Nickelodeon?
I thought it was a loot crate devoted entirely to the hit Clive Owen drama, The Nick.
Honestly, I don't know. I don't know which I would find less appealing. It's a battle.
First of all, it was all Nickelodeon shit, and especially the early boxes were like '90s Nickelodeon, which is super my jam. But then, just a lot of the stuff I just didn't care about, and so after a while, I was like, you know what? This is now getting into a territory that I'm like, I don't care anymore. And that's a bad place to be.
Chan, don't tell me that you wouldn't be compelled by ordering a loot crate from the thinnest possible like pretext for a loot crate on God's green earth, and then seeing like, oh my God, will they pull it out this month? Will they think of anything to put in this month's crate?
Yeah, that's so true. And they keep harping on the same things. So if I still had it now, which would be like I would have had to, it would have been years by now. If I still had it, I'd have like a jillion things that are Rugrats related, a jillion things that are Rocco's Modern Life related. And as it stands, I already have a lot of those things simply by signing up for the short amount of time I was signed up.
You know what I still think about to this day, speaking of Nickelodeon, is do you remember the magazine they used to put out?
No.
There used to be a Nick magazine, and what I remember apart from
Oprah's magazine,
it was put out by Oprah. and what I remember most of all, like it had comics and stuff, and I don't know what else. But the thing I thought about the most was that they routinely had contests where the prize was one of everything Sega makes, and then it was, then later it would be like two.
What?
And you're like, and I was like, not like a socially adept person then or now. So I was like, what could I possibly do with the other one ever? I think like in theory, you would become very popular if you were the kid who was always giving away like consoles and games. But I was like, I would feel like another anxiety about like the other, the copy.
Who to give it to?
The copy piling up someplace. Like, I could set up one in my bedroom and one in the living room. I don't know.
Everyone else can play in the living room. You can play in your bedroom, like, and you're still popular.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's what I would have done. That's just not to be one of the successes in my life. You know, it's too late for that.
Thank goodness this was before the advent of eBay, when you could have sold the console and the games to fund your heroin habit.
Yeah.
That you would gain because you had that extra money laying around.
At the time, I think your only option would be getting ripped off by a local video game store.
Sure. Yeah.
Store credit.
I don't know, a brand new game gear. I'll give you $20.
Yeah.
It's like, this is my experience.
It's like when you try to resell your diamonds. I was trying to have this conversation with my aunt.
Are you trying to resell diamonds?
No, and now you're trying to have the conversation with us?
No. Okay, you know what they say? They're only worth anything at all because there's a chokehold on the market, and it's advertised all the time as cachet and a symbol of wealth, even though they're the most fucking common thing. They're way more common than gold, way more common than rubies, you know, but for whatever fucking reason, you know, humans are willing to pay a certain whatever the fuck for them, right?
It's like popcorn in movie theaters.
Especially just regular white diamonds. If it was like some really specific color, I mean, that would be different. But anyway.
Yeah.
I was trying to have this conversation with my aunt. And she was just like, what are you talking about? Well, but not my bracelet. And I was like, well, you know, yes. She's like, well, but I got it at an antique shop. And it's gold and diamonds. I was like, well, the gold is always worth something. She just like wasn't hearing it. I'm sorry, but I used to work at a store that sold like art and jewelry. And we would have people come in to get like to buy something really nice for like an engagement ring or something. And then have come back after a certain period of time and try to resell it to us because it didn't work out. And we'd have to be like, you don't want to do that because we can't give you what you paid. And it's like the minute it leaves the store, kind of like a car, it's worth like zip. But not as much.
Zip 50.
Yeah.
One of the most sad things I ever saw at a Goodwill was this like lucite block that had engraved on it like whatever the name was, "Will you marry me?"
Oh, from a mall kiosk.
I didn't know what it would have come from. That could be what it is.
I've seen those kiosks where like they put a picture, they engrave it like somehow into the lucite block.
Anyway. It was a bummer.
Yeah, it's at Goodwill for good reason. Of course, if you were to ask someone of that same name to marry you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you might as well hold on to it and see if you love another Lucy ever.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Wait, are you saying the name was Lucy and it was in Lucite?
No, that was a totally like a random pull. I don't know why
that was a smart pull.
I assume the person was just in love with individual cigarettes purchased on the street.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Now we're getting the Spider Fest.
Enough talk.
Now we're getting the Spider Fest.
It's time for action.
Okay, so first of all, this is taking place in Texas. We are on the move.
Now, is it legal for AEW to do shows outside the state of Florida?
Yeah. Now it is. Thanks, Biden. Kidding.
Wow.
You know how people used to do that? Thanks, Obama. Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Obama.
This is a really big arena and it is full of people. It is like, it gives me chills, actually. So the first match of the night is the IWGP match between Moxley and Carl Anderson. Carl Anderson comes, he's accompanied by Doc Gallows, and Moxley is accompanied by Eddie. And this is the first time we've seen Mox fight in a while. I was really excited about it. It was interesting because like the way that they were fighting at first, it looked like, you know, very IWGP, like strong style. Mm-hmm. It was a really fun match. I thought they both did well. I really missed seeing Mox, so I was so happy to see it.
Yep.
The crowd was unbelievable. And of course, it turned out the way I wanted it to, which is Mox won. So I gave the whole thing a thumbs up.
It didn't turn out the way I wanted it to, with world peace erupting.
Maybe someday.
My dreams are so low. The bar is so low for me.
I kind of hoped for Moxley and Carl Anderson teaming up to discover the cure for cancer in the ring. At the risk of going to a really cliched finish.
It's in the Declaration of Independence. I also thought it was really interesting to see that sort of different style play out there. The thing about the countouts bothered me a little bit, because they're like, it's a 20 count, but in Japan, their 20 counts are like 1, 2, 3, 4, and they still do like one. Na 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 na.
Yeah.
Two.
Vary the count.
But yeah, seeing Carl Anderson like show off like what he can really do,
it was
pretty great.
It was and this is something where I think sometimes I wonder if I overcredit certain kinds of wrestlers, but I always think when someone like has hung with the big guys in New Japan, I always think that guy has to be for real. He wouldn't have gone to New Japan and like hit there,
yeah,
over like by some fluke. But because they were forcing him on their audience for any reason other than he can deliver in the ring, because that's their deal. They have people who can cut promos and they have people who can do other things, but you got to be a worker. So like, it's super cool to be aware. Like you know, Moxley.
Isn't it sad that that is your perspective, that they have a certain bar of expectation, and then not for the promotions here in America?
Well, no, I mean, like,
if you did something over there, now I know you do. Well, it's
just a question of priorities. Like here, there are promotions that do things that New Japan does not do for me. Right. Like, I can be kind of bored by New Japan because it's you know, like, numbingly about this. It's about the moves. I'm like, sometimes I want a crazy guy,
yeah,
cutting someone open, and you don't do that ever. Yeah. So like wrestling really is a multifaceted entertainment product, and here even the most wrestling heavy promotions accentuate the entertainment end of it a little bit more. But in New Japan, it's just not that way. And Japan has other promotions that are like ours. Noah is more like us. DDT is more like us, I think. But that's just a thing that I always think, is when I'm aware that somebody mixes it up with New Japan guys, as like, I'm always aware Moxley is like that, but I don't always think that necessarily about the Good Brothers. I'm like, oh yeah, Carl Anderson is good enough for New Japan. And in this match, you like, he was doing things that were like, oh shit, right. He's not just, a goofy lackey for AJ Styles. He can do things in his own right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And he's not just a goofy lackey for the Young Bucks, you know, and he really kind of steps out on his own here. And it's interesting because, you know, since they started doing shit with AEW, I guess they haven't been highlighted in this way just yet. So it was neat to see that not only is he on his own, he's not with Doc or any weird shenanigans happening. It's like a straight match between him and Mox. And you get to see what makes him, you know, and things that he and Mox maybe even trained on, you know, together with. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry. My throat.
Oh my God.
You're just that moved by his work.
You're getting choked up. I got so moved by Carl Anderson.
I can just imagine how it tugged at your heartstrings when he did his machine gun miming during the entrance, which I appreciated because I was like, he knows how you do that. He knows how you do that for real.
Tommy gun, baby.
But this match like didn't just have like pure quasi Olympic like wrestling. Like there was biting happening.
I mean, it was like a riff for real match. It's to me, it's like indicative of a Moxley match. Everything's on the table. You know, you don't really know exactly how it's going to play out, but it's not going to be pretty.
It was, like in this one especially. I think he usually comes to the ring with a head of steam, but like the way he came, like in just a rage. And there's almost nothing funnier than somebody angrily trying to open a little gate or something like that, you know?
But I like that they still went through the crowd because, like, first of all, it was fun to see with an empty stadium, but the fact that there's a crowd of people that are just so excited to be there, you know, it's the first time they've maybe been to a live event in a long time, and to see some of their favorite wrestlers like inches away. That's always cool.
It's great. Like, we're still in this honeymoon phase where it's like, yes, you've come down to the ring a million times in the last year and a half. And also you haven't even once because you haven't done it with those people there. It just feels like, yeah, they should do that. They should, you know, if possible, give even more and be closer than they normally would be to try to like restore to people what they weren't getting to have.
All right. So did we all thumbs this up?
Yeah.
Okay. Next we have a promo with Jake the Snake and Lance Archer, the Murderhawk Monster. Basically what I didn't know about Lance is that he used to have the belt.
The IWGP US Championship.
The IWGP belt. And he lost it to Moxley, and now he's challenging Moxley for the belt again. He wants a Texas death match. It's going to take place in Texas again. This will be next week, and I thought it was a great promo, and I have not been a fan of his promos in general, but I really liked it. I gave it a thumbs up.
Yeah, me too. Like, I honestly thought, and, you know, he hasn't, never been good in promos before, but I was questioning, do I think this is his best, or at least one of his best, because it felt purely good and engaging to me in a way like that normally he has not been. Like, I thought it was really great.
Yeah.
I thought it was fine. I was excited that, like, they're setting up this thing for next week, and it came about in a way that like feels good. Like, yeah, I'm excited for this. And it was pretty no nonsense. But like, maybe that's kind of what I missed. I feel like, Archer, doesn't, bring the same intensity as like, say, a Mox to a promo, but right. When he's doing something along with it, like, I like that thing where he was like throwing wrestlers around in the locker room.
Oh yeah. That was a good one.
You didn't like it, Teresa, but like for me it sort of like filled in the holes of him just cutting like a I want to fight you kind of promo. So this was fine. And I'm generally for it, but I middled it because, you know, this was what it was.
Yeah, I remember, like, that was Jake the Snake was talking and Lance was just beating ass, right? Was that?
Yeah.
I think something I liked about that one was that there was this presented disparity of there is violent insanity happening at the same time that there is something other that like someone is inhabiting a civil world at the same time that he is demonstrably not. That's a lot of fancy talk, I guess. But yeah, that, I thought that was a good one.
All right. Then we have Andrade El Idolo. Now, this is really great. First of all, when the crowd heard, because he was backstage, that they were talking to Andrade, you could hear the crowd cheer super loud, which I think is so cool. So anyways, he has a valet now. It's like a guy that just like has a little sticky roller to clean his suits.
The rare true valet who puts his clothes on for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I tell you what, as soon as I become rich, like I'm the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to hire a dude to carry around one of those lint rollers and just roll me, because man, I do not like doing that.
Okay, here's what you do. He has lint roller one hand, stain stick other hand.
Oh snap! So I can just go out and eat spaghetti any old time.
Oh yeah,
because you know that's like old school money. That's where the whole idea that rich people are job creators comes from. Is old school lords and ladies who hired random ass people to do random ass shit, including put their clothes on, help them put their clothes on and do their hair and stuff. Like, you know, because why would you do that other than being like, you know what? I have all this money and there are so many people in this town that need jobs. Yeah. I'll just make up a position, which is help me put my jacket on. Anyways.
You know, I mean, yeah, sometimes people are just bad at that too, though.
Very true. Andrade basically was asking, where's the death triangle? He did this. They figured something out for him, which I think they'll probably continue, which is they gave him subtitles. I like it because it's not biting on Penta's thing. Mm-hmm. It gives him a lot of room to talk however the fuck he wants to talk.
Yeah.
And he comes across way better. Awesome. Great. I am not, again, from what I remember, never used to be a mega Andrade fan. Of course, he had a mouthpiece, Zelina. I said that very weird.
Wow. Yes, it was very weird.
Geese.
The minute I started saying it, my brain was like, what are you saying? And I'm what like, that, I don't know, but now I got to finish it.
What that sounds like when you split it up is like a side piece, but just for mouth stuff.
Anyways, so he's asking, where's the death triangle? And I'm very excited because if that means we get to see the reunified death triangle, holy shit, I am into it. I miss that threesome.
Yeah.
But anyways, the whole thing I thought was really good. I thought he did a great job.
I liked it a lot. Sorry. Go ahead, Jen.
Oh, no, I just needed to report that in my notes, in all caps, I wrote Alex with a hat. I don't know. Okay, well, I will say, yeah, I do know. I don't like
okay,
that hat.
Okay.
I don't like that hat. I get, though, that you want to, like, really distinguish Alex as interviewer and Alex as mouthpiece for Penta. So, like, it's okay. But, man, that hat.
It's like the Kermit the Frog when Kermit did the news.
With the little
it's like that hat.
Put that little tag on there. Yeah.
In my mind, my preference would be, and maybe I wouldn't feel this way if Abrahantes hadn't already become so indelible as Penta's mouthpiece, but now it's hard to take him as anything else. We don't hear him doing commentary like on in Spanish, but if we did, I would be like, that would bother me a little bit, and this bothers me a little bit.
You know what they should do is they should do what they did with Taz, because he was doing some interviews, and before he became full-on Team Taz, he would introduce like a little bit of personality to it, like, you know, like, well, you know what, I feel like you were good at this, but maybe you need to work on this or something. And to just have like a little bit of that when he's interviewing. He's like, well, you know, you're pretty good, but I'm just telling you, Penta, he's ready to go kind of thing.
Yeah, it would be interesting if he approached every interview as like, I'm just going to let you know that my guy can beat your ass, but go ahead and talk.
Yeah. I think
go ahead
I would
and
like,
tell me your thoughts.
I think I would like that. That would make sense to me. But and because I think that they would do that well in a way that WWE, like, I would tend to find their heel commentators more grating because it didn't feel as if it was as much constructed on this is the Rock under which this piece of shit, you know, like
stands.
Yeah. With Iberhantes, I think that would go fairly well. He really does everything fairly well. He's hard to dislike.
It's interesting that Alex is interviewing Andrade, and Andrade is asking about the Death Triangle, and Alex, like, basically is buds with Death Triangle.
Yeah, yeah, he can tell him.
Yeah, he's like, I could tell you where they are.
Look,
I got a cell number you want.
I can't tell you now because you see the hat I'm wearing.
Yeah, but the minute I take it off.
And the thing is also like his card is in my hat. So at the same time that I take off the hat metaphorically, I'm taking off the hat literally, and I'll get that number out for you like right away.
And I'll say this about the subtitles. I like the subtitles. I don't want it on a promo that looks like it's supposed to be live backstage. Shoot it on film.
I don't mind it.
Do a thing that is sort of like, we talked with Penta earlier, and here's what he had to say. Because
the news, you know, does it all the time.
Yeah, but they don't do it in that font that, you know, is clearly a post-production font. If they did something that looked like a little scroll or, you know, whatever
like
you call
a,
that for like
a live transcription,
right,
crawl.
Right.
Yeah,
this sort of like bashes those two ideas together. And I don't mind when they have, you know, just sort of like a filmy looking, you know, promo. I think that's great. The Mox promo later, like just kind of shoot it like that.
I think it would
and
be
then put it over. I'm fine.
Really funny if they were like, yeah, and Alex Marvez took an IMAX camera down to the locker room to talk.
Oh my
to.
God. Okay. I have to say this just because we're 40 minutes in and we've literally only covered three segments. We have to move along.
Fair enough. Anyway,
okay. All right. So we've talked enough about Andrade and this promo that lasted all of 5 seconds.
Caller, what did you give this?
It's an up for me.
Okay.
All right. So because we have way more important things to talk about, like the next match, which is Ricky Starks versus Brian Cage. Taz is on mic. Hobbs and Hook were at the side of the ring. Ricky
Hobbs
Starks
in a white tee and overalls. What?
I was like, did he get that from Santana? From Ortiz was doing that?
The 90s are back in a real big way, and that was every dude at my high school. Okay, whatever.
Did he get it out of a Nick box?
Yeah.
When did Clive Owen wear that?
Oh Lord. Oh God. Okay, so Ricky Starks, when he came out and the crowd lost their fucking mind. He did his pose, everybody lost it. It gave me chills. And I could tell that it gave him chills because when he was walking, I think he tried to do that little thing where he plays with his necklace, but he was so pumped he like broke his fucking necklace.
and you can
see the look on his face. He's like, oh shit. And then landed on the floor in front of him.
And then he's going to try to take that necklace to the place where he bought it and resell it. And they're going to be like, we can't buy this back.
Yeah. So, oh God, this whole thing was so great. Ricky would hold his neck at different points. The match made me laugh. The faces Ricky makes. I mean, it's been long since I've been able to see this. And I can't even describe how happy it made me. Cage did his bicep curls. Ricky did some incredible moves. You know, lots of fun heel shit, like sticking his tongue out. Like something sly.
When he was biting Cage's fingers, he would like bite and then, you know, like turn to the ref. So the ref, you know, like as soon as he's not looking, he bites again. Then he does a little, just a take to the camera. He's like, ugh, these fingers taste terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
Starks, like, and I was, this is something else where I was really like taken with, just how good Starks is, like on the emotional, like performance, like level that I was like, you know what? He made me unironically enjoy an Ow My Balls. you know, at one point when he was straddling the rope.
Yeah.
And like, you're so good. You're so good at this. it was pretty amazing.
He sells the fuck out of everything. everything, mm-hmm. whether it's something he's doing or something someone else is doing. Like he screams, the way he screams when it looks like Brian might do something, you know, like he's like not even doing the thing. He's just about to do something. But Ricky powerbombed Cage, which was crazy because the size difference is unfucking real. And yeah. so it was neat. And he was screaming like excited, but then he only got a two count. And then his scream changed. And it was like, Ricky was going to use the belt to hit Cage, but then Hobbs takes it. And he was upset by it. But then, so Hook distracted the ref, Hobbs hit Cage with the belt, and then Starks.
He didn't want Ricky
pins.
To get his hands dirty. Come on now.
What?
He didn't want Ricky to get his hands dirty.
No, it was really a very interesting and very clever variation on what they might otherwise have done. It was great because it was like, I don't know what the communication would have been between Ricky and Hobbs about this is the plan. Because like, I think, you know, you could buy, oh, well, Ricky can easily act that like consciously, or it could have been that Hobbs like took it upon himself to do that, to make sure that like, that he didn't get his hands dirty. But it made it far more interesting. I liked it.
Yeah, this was a great match. So yeah, Starks pins, he gets the belt. He's like the fucking best. I'm so excited for this storyline. I also want to note, this is when I noticed a woman in the crowd who was wearing a Republic of Lucha shirt. It's like the Lucha Brothers. It's the adorable one where there are these two little
GB one.
Yeah, I love it. I actually have that same shirt, but in blue. And I got so excited about it and I posted about it. And then she actually saw I posted and responded to it, which I thought was really cool because, like, you know, yay, fan engagement, fans seeing fans and being supportive of fans. That's what AEW is all about.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying that, but maybe. I also have to note that there was a Jimmy John's commercial where the guy's like, Jimmy's John's.
Oh, yeah. The brother from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah. And yeah. That made me laugh. So all in all, everything about this, gave it a thumbs up. It was so good.
Do you guys like Jimmy John's better or
I will never Mike's? Eat at Jimmy John's. I no? will never eat at Jimmy John's because that guy murders endangered animals.
Probably with his fists.
Like, is that a sandwich or something?
No. Like, he uses sandwich? A gun and it's some bullshit.
Oh, do not like.
I used to eat it all the time, though, to be real.
Oh, yeah.
But then I found out about that, and I was like, oh, fuck this guy.
It's a hard day when you find out you can't have one of the better hoagies that you like.
I mean, it's like the one you get when you can't get the one you get want.
Did you just say that we have to keep moving on? Yes. We're going to go on a Jimmy John's digression?
I'm sorry.
Jimmy John's?
We were having a moment of principle, Chan. Not that you would understand that.
Yeah. All right. So moving right along, another incredible segment in my opinion. So Cody runs out. And he's pissed. And he goes straight to the announce desk, puts on a little headphone mic, and he's like, he's talking to the camera, and he's like, hey, Malakai Black? Yeah, a phone call would have sufficed. What we don't do is kick a 6-year-old guy in the face. And then he's like, you know what? I'm not getting my point across. And then he takes off the headset, runs to the stage or the ring, grabs a mic, and then he's calling out Malakai Black, and he's like, you know what? Get your ass out of here because I feel like fighting. And then Black shows up, like we're used to seeing him at WWE, in a black void with some smoke, and he's basically telling a story. And I was like, oh, please don't be that guy. I really had enough of that guy before. Don't be that guy. But then Cody is pissed, and he's like, come down to the ring now. And so then the lights go out. Then he's in the ring. And here's another reason why AEW is so cool. Well, just whoever's putting all this together is cool. They're both in suits. Cody's in all white. Malakai Black is in all black. So they're like pissed, coming at each other. The refs are breaking it up. I love this type of Cody. And I'm excited to see what this will do with Malachi Black. I can't wait to see the storyline. This whole segment did what it's supposed to do. Get me curious and interested, and my thumbs are way up.
Oh yeah. Yeah, me too. I liked this this version of him from before. Done well, he can to say something really creepy with a lot of gravitas, like he can really lay that on there. So I like he in this segment, he told this story about putting down like an old horse that like was, I don't know, worked on me. Yeah, and I also was like, yeah, you don't see enough white suit against black suit matches, you know, like we're all right, next week, Fyter Fest Night 2. It's a spy versus spy match.
It was a pretty cool visual and a very clear, you know, hero villain, you know. Anyway, I liked it.
I have almost exactly the same notes here. The white and black visual is amazing. I like a fiery Cody. This worked for me. My read of Malachi Black, Tommy End, is Michael Madsen.
Ooh.
He felt very much like a Quentin Tarantino Michael Madsen character when he was doing that, and it's a speed that I really like on him. I think it was kind of a laid back, scuzzy kind of evil that is different. It's not the spooky mooky mystery. I'm going hoodoo on you.
I think we do agree that we hope that AEW signs spooky mooky.
Yeah, spooky mookie's pretty great. See him down in the indies. I liked it. Yeah.
Okay. So the next thing, here's where we can save some time. So we've got Tommy backstage. Santana and Ortiz approach him. He's by himself. They grab him, but they didn't hurt him. And then they're like, get your boys. And he's like, I'm going to get my boys.
Oh, this was hysterical.
And you just wait. And the whole, I could hear the crowd cheer and laugh. So that's always great. We're all on the same page on this one. It's stupid. But the thing is that I actually liked Santana Ortiz in this moment, but I really don't want to encourage this whole storyline, which is a problem, right? Because now I'm like, if they're listening to my thumbs, it's like heavy as the head that wears the crown. You know?
You have to be responsible when you're trying to discipline your pro wrestling promotion, because sometimes they'll do things that are bad that you still kind of respond to on an emotional level positively, and you just can't do that, you know.
Yeah,
be right back. I'm going to change our t-shirts from Thumb Your Heart to Listen to My Thumbs.
I think it should be an illustration of somebody like thumb get like gouging, like but gouging the ear.
Ear gouges, yes.
I guess that would be like a thumb wet willy is what that would be.
That sounds terrible.
Or you know, when you're making a little moose head at somebody. Okay.
Oh, okay. I know that.
I middled it.
I thumbsed it up because I did like the way they presented, like, Santana Ortiz, like, okay, here it comes. We're going to get you back. Oh, you know, we don't do that. We respect our elders.
Yeah.
They didn't look any less for having done that.
Right.
They like showed off that they were bad guys, but also had ethics. And I thought that was a really cool, like, needle to thread.
Mm-hmm.
Tully's a little bit goofy and what all, but I liked the whole thing of it. So I did thumb it up.
I thumbsed it up mostly, I think, because of the goofiness of Tully, because not only did he do this thing of like a nerd trying to recover some face, like after having ice cream shoved in his face by being like, yeah, I will suck on that. But he also did this thing that I enjoyed of, like, you know, the thing where like you're one guy against several and you help even the odds by like taking a thing that you have and throwing it at them, and then that like that knocks out one guy for a moment, you beat up the other guy, then the first guy it like gets over the jacket you threw on him and now you beat him up. So like Tully tries to shove his like luggage at them to buy himself like some space, but it like works 0%. And they, I was amused by that.
Okay. So we've got Shivani and Hangman and Paige in the ring. Hangman is officially trying to challenge for the belt, but Don Callis gets on the mic. Ugh. And so Don Callis interrupts, and you know, when you hear that voice, ooh, something good's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And of course, he comes down to the ring with Omega. And basically, it's like, you know, you're all talk. That I believe in Texas, they call that all hat, no cattle, which, you know, play into the audience. That's great. So the whole group, the whole elite group, they come out and they're looking funny. They're looking just the heeliest.
Mm-hmm. Do they? Matt Jackson has these things custom. Those outfits are so over the top and amazing. Really,
I mean, I'm sure that that's what it is. It has to be.
Matt Jackson had a Keith Harrington outfit, which I don't think was custom, but definitely on him. He made it look totally ridiculous.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I happen to think Keith Haring was a fantastic, amazing artist. And
Harrington. What was it?
I like. Don't necessarily think it's a heel move to like his work,
right?
But somehow, like
he
it
makes
comes
it
off,
look,
yeah,
he makes In it look context. Ridiculous. It looked like a onesie because he had the top and the bottoms, and so they just sort of blended together. It just looked like a onesie, which it was good.
They keep looking worse. Mm-hmm. It's impressive.
So the way this all is playing out, you know. Matt gets in Hangman's face. So then, you know, Paige hits Matt and then Omega is going to hit Paige with the belt, but the Dark Order comes out. So then Omega gets on the mic and by the way, his hair is half up, which God damn it. They just are so great.
Yeah.
So he's basically saying your guys against me and all of the elite. So 5 against 5 elimination style match. Paige is like, well, that's not the match I wanted, but we'll do it. And when we do win, then you have to give my guys a shot at the tag titles. And Omega's like, you didn't earn it. None of you earned it. And the crowd's saying, cowboy shit. And Omega's like, shut up.
Oh, my God.
How he's responding to the crowd.
Like, it was the absolute best. Like, and my God, to harp again on the value of the audience, but what you have to play against, like in that scenario, is so much better because the moment of him talking about how when he wins, he's going to turn cowboy shit. Into belt collector.
Yeah.
Belt collector.
That was one of my favorite dumb moments. I was like, did you just think of that in the moment? Because, like, that is so bad. better than that.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be, instead of cowboy shit, it's going to become like you are shit or like Omega shit or some just like turn of phrase.
Omega
but to make
shit.
It so bad is, oh my God.
It was hilarious.
It's such masterful, you know, undercutting of himself that I love it.
It's great. It's you know, like, and this happens elsewhere in the show, like where one of the best qualities a wrestler can have is humility and the willingness to be in that position.
It's called showing your ass.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of wrestlers can't or won't do it. And it's Omega just does it so well.
So, yeah, this is going to be a match that we look forward to seeing. Huge thumbs up.
Mm-hmm. When I hear 5-on-5 elimination, I'm usually just like, just hold my head in my hands. Like, oh, but when they added in that the tag title shot was on the line too, then I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Cause like
Consider who it's against, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
This is going to be good.
It's going to be a good match. You're spinning off like a new storyline that can be very, very fun. And that's certainly made up for the thing that AEW sometimes does that is not the greatest of, like, this grudge match could not be more personal. So let us settle it in the only appropriate way, getting everyone else in there also.
That's what I don't like about it. And Omega Page, you know, has been building for so long that, like, mm-hmm. it's an inevitability that it's going to happen. But the tag titles weren't a necessary inevitability. Right. So, like, it felt real good to, like, add that stake to it.
Yeah. And, like, I think that there's more totally time agreed. To play this thing out to get to that real blowout.
Also, Paige's Chiron said feeling weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Understated and wonderful. yeah.
All right. So then we have Jericho and Marvez backstage. Basically, Jericho's talking about, you know, where he's at with this whole five labors of Jericho, blah, blah, blah. But then Spears comes in and hits Chris in the throat with a chair. And then MJF comes in to say that he's got to fight Sean Spears next week, and the stipulation will be that Spears can use a chair, but Chris can't. I don't like these segments anymore. There's nothing wrong with this segment. You know, it is the way it should be, but I middled it because I just don't care.
You know what? I'm just going to say yes. 100% agreement. That is basically what I was going to say, except for the one line where he says, it's not surprising that he uses Greek mythology to get what he wants from me. That is a sentence I never expected to hear in any context, much less professional wrestling. And wow, that is it is a sentence.
It's pretty good. But I also middled just because it was fine, and I think I might have upped it under other circumstances, but it's just one of those times when, like, everything else, like, so much else was so good. Mm-hmm. That I was like, you know, there needs to be a delineation here. Mm-hmm. So that was where I was.
Okay. Then we've got Matt Hardy versus Christian Cage. I miss seeing Matt wrestle. I did like it, but I don't know. It also made me sad that I wasn't watching Broken Matt Hardy because I don't feel like I get to see his personality. Like, this particular persona doesn't highlight a lot of Matt's personality. Matt still was Matt, and there's some great shit in there, as always. There's a lot of back and forth. I thought this was a decent match with these guys. You know, Cage wins. So, of course, as has happened with the HFO.
Yes.
Private Party and Solo show up, but Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy also show up. So, and then Luchasaurus puts Cage on his shoulders. And it looked for a second like Jungle Boy wasn't happy about that, but I'm sure it's fine.
I love that papering over of, like, a profound worry. I'm sure the borders of that mole are not as irregular as they seem.
What do you guys think?
I was gonna middle it until the finish where Christian just, like, rolls in and just does, like, a quick whatever his finisher is, I forget, and then pins him. Both these guys are past their prime, which is since they're both high flyers, it's real hard to make it work.
Right.
And, you know, both of them have bulked up a lot since those days. And so, you know, like, they can sort of credibly, you know, have a slugfest and whatnot like that, but they're just slower, not as interesting to watch. And, the finish really took it out of me because it just felt so cheap to give Christian the win. And, like, yeah, of course Christian's going to win, but it was a middle, and then I had to down it. I feel bad. But yeah.
Mine was a middle.
Interesting. Guess what? It's a rainbow.
Oh!
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Well, hey, he's allowed to like it.
No, it's fine. I wasn't expecting it.
I listened to my thumb. I don't know. I guess I liked the energy in it. It was a fun match to me, and there were just some little moments that were very, very amusing to me. About JR saying, like, you got to watch those tongs now. and at one point, like, Christian was able to stop himself, when Hardy tried to get bounce him against the ropes, and like on commentary they said, Christian put on the brakes. I don't think Matt Hardy realizes it. And, like, do you think that that's because Christian didn't re-collide with Matt Hardy? Is that why that would tip off Matt Hardy? Also, I don't think I realized Christian had a move called Matt Hardy had a move called the Leech.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah, that feels like something that has been happening in Dark, because I've never heard of it.
Anyway, I enjoyed it.
Next, we have a promo with Miro. I fucking love it. He's like, I don't know. He's like, I got a hot wife who can do the splits. There was a man who had a hot wife who could do the splits, but he was hot too, but he was lost.
The man was hot too, but he was lost.
Yeah. Oh. I know. And he's like, you know, I'm willing. Some people are willing to defend a title with their life, but I'm willing to defend my title with your life. He's like, I'm God's favorite champion. I'm the redeemer. Wow. Wow, this is so good. So he's like taking it a step up every fucking time. Now he's not just God's favorite champion. He's the redeemer. Ugh, I love it. This God complex situation with Miro is so perfect. Thumbs up.
Hey.
Remix. That's what happens when your service of choice craps out and you lose like 15 minutes of content. We lost a bunch of stuff, so we're going to redo it again because we can't just leave you in the lurch. You have to know what's happening.
We care.
Us in our personal lives, I have no idea what we were talking about. I'm sure we went off on some random ass tangents that were completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
So make sure.
If that was 15 minutes of content, we absolutely did.
Yeah, it was like 2.5 minutes about the show.
Looking at the segments, I'm like, there's no reason that needed to be 15 minutes.
Imagine like putting out an episode that's only an hour and 15 minutes long.
I know. The shock and gall.
So I believe we left off. Haller, you had to tell us what you thought of the Miro promo.
I'm trying to replace myself in time here. Miro is like now doing something that is so like amazing, like, because he's doing this like darker version of a religious kind of a character than right. Some of the ones that we've seen in the past. Like we were talking about, it's something I do remember we were talking about that was on point. was like how this diverged from the Monday Night Messiah character of Seth Rollins, and right. how, like, in my mind it just feels like Miro is doing this much more dangerous thing, and like it just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, it's surprising because usually you stay away from religious stuff in wrestling because it's such a live wire. There's so many ways it can go wrong, and at least for me, this is 100% on point.
Absolutely. It's like some megalomaniac type of version of a religious leader, which who's to say that's not all religious leaders? I'm kidding. But, you know, we've definitely seen true life documentaries or whatever about megalomaniacs who run religious orders. In quotes, of course.
Which part's in quotes?
The quotes that say Shelley Miscavige is alive.
Oh, wow.
Oh boy.
Oh, no, they're going to come after me. Okay.
Yeah. So
Shelley, if you're alive, you owe me $10. Don't forget.
I have written down, we all gave thumbs up to this. So
yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, then we don't. I'm sure what we said then was true.
Yes. Then we have Shivani. doing an in-ring announcement with Britt Baker, and she has the belt now, so, you know, she's wearing it, looks cool. She hugs Shivani in the ring. Again, that's her dad. But also, I do remember we brought up this point last time. Isn't that a conflict of interest?
I believe my retort was Alex Abrahantes. But also, like, I like how they sort of blend a little bit of, like, like, yes, this is a character, and, like, the person, the actual person, Britt Baker, is someone who busts her ass, working real hard, yeah, like, people are proud of each other. There's a sense of community. With AEW, where, like, you know, like, in real life, they're all friends. So,
yeah,
like, this blurs the line in a way that I appreciate. I like it.
Okay.
But if you don't, I know you hate Britt Baker. You hate dentists or something, but whatever the reason.
Personal issues.
What I don't like is when she does things like what she did tonight, where, okay, so Shivani's like, hey, you're put through a table. How are you? And she just proceeded to cut a very mean promo. It's like so mean. Maybe it's mean because it hovers just above the truth somehow. But like she basically was saying that Nyla is not significant at all. There's nothing that she has that would make her successful in this business or even memorable. And that just made me sad. But Vicky and Nyla were watching her do this promo from backstage, and they cut their promo like immediately. So they responded immediately after, and Nyla gave a really good promo. She said, you know, everything's been handed to you, and I'm going to hand you an ass whooping that's world class. Don't hold me responsible. After all, it's the nature of the beast, which I liked how she said it. I liked how she phrased things tonight.
I liked it, but also I think that it's not like it to say that is it reminds me of like when somebody uploads a pirated music video and they're like, do not sue me. All rights to the artist. And I'm like, I don't know if that.
Don't bother finding out who the artist is.
I don't know if that gets you off the hook at all.
To be fair, this promo does not have any legal standing.
Right.
Your Honor.
if I may direct you to the case of Rose v. Baker.
I may just be a simple country manager. But it seems to me... that if the nature of the beast is to deliver an ass-whooping world class, then an ass-whooping world class shall be delivered.
I believe my client did properly supply that world class ass-whooping.
Shout out to Phil Hartman. Rest in peace. Unfrozen caveman lawyer.
Oh, yeah. Man. Oh, boy.
That's right. Caveman lawyer. That was great.
Oh, boy.
I will say that I feel like this one doesn't hit as close... it doesn't feel like it hits close like you're thinking or that you're feeling that it hits close to the truth, because I feel like Nyla will always be relevant and is always a threat.
Yeah.
And in fact, it disturbs me when they don't put her out there as the beast, as the one to beat all of the time.
Yeah.
So like to me, that's like just a heel just saying bullshit.
And she's so huge. I mean, I think like probably Jade is taller. But Nyla is really tall and she's got a formidable presence. And it's like she could be the Andre the Giant of the women's division. You know what I mean? Like when you see her pick up these other performers, it's like, holy shit.
Yeah,
get
exactly.
out of the way.
No,
like as far as credibility, there's no point where you're like, yeah, she couldn't possibly whip that other woman's ass. She could whip them all.
Yeah.
And I will never doubt that.
Yeah. That's true. If it was just the Brit segment, I would have middled it. But because of the Nyla segment, it's a thumbs up.
Yeah, thumbs up just in general. I thought it was
great. It's an up for me for sure. Yeah. To me, both were pretty entertaining.
So next we have the Moxley promo. And he really gets Lance Archer over in this one. He basically is responding to Lance. And he said, you know, one doesn't beat Lance Archer. One survives Lance Archer. And I survived Lance Archer. And I thought that was really great.
The whole and all I got was a stupid t-shirt.
What'd you say?
I survived Lance Archer and all I got was a stupid t-shirt.
Mm.
Oh, for reals, come on, for reals. AEW, where are you with that one?
If that shows up in shop at AEW, I will buy 10 of them. That is amazing. 10.
If that shows up, then we know for sure they're listening to us.
Okay, so you're getting the I Survived Lance Archer and all I got was the stupid t-shirt in white and in black. You're getting the tank top. You're getting the baby onesie.
Mm-hmm.
And the bandana.
Oh, yeah, you're getting the bandana.
The fanny pack and the back patch.
Yeah, you're getting the beer koozie.
I will tell you for reals. I love coffee cups, and the odds of me picking up any logo or thing right. or graphic goes up 1,000-fold if you put it on a coffee cup.
I agree. I have a terrible habit of that as well, and I have way too many. I don't even have room for them.
No, I have boxes that I've had to I can only have out a certain amount of coffee cups, and I have to store the rest away. Otherwise, the cabinets are just full and unusable.
Oh, like we have too many of everything as it is, and I also have a weakness. I love going to Goodwill and getting the weird mugs that you can get there. And I just like know when I go there now, I can't buy any ever because you know there are easily 20 more than we can use now. I'm the only one who drinks coffee, I think.
I mean, unless it's a collab between the Care Bears and the Simpsons, then of course you have to add another to your collection. Well, I mean, it's never ending.
Or if there is like any mug or any item that is clear that is like homemade somehow and tells a personal tragedy, I will always buy that.
Jesus Christ, that sounds weirdly specific, and I don't want to know.
My mom put me on lithium at 12.
You're gonna find out.
And all I got was a stupid coffee mug.
Like one of my favorite mugs that I don't drink from because it's too delicate is this one that commemorates like two tween girls where one of them moved away. And the mug is like, we're still connected, even though we're far apart.
Aw, that's nice.
But one of them gave away their mug to Goodwill.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Okay.
What if one of them died?
Oh, man. Well,
then you have to keep that mug.
You have to keep the mug.
Oh, my God. Would you give that mug away if your friend died? If you love them so much that you made custom mugs and then they died, you're not going to keep that mug?
I mean, hers might, the person who passed away, the family might have given it away.
Okay.
But
okay.
If they were twins, I mean, that's questionable. But then that also, you have to wonder too, do you then get buried with the mug? You know what I mean? Because then that still is true.
Yeah.
Two things here. One, this is actually connected to wrestling, so I will allow it. Two, we got to move on.
Okay. I know. This is why it was 15 minutes. This is why. It's the shortest promo on earth, and we're still talking about it. Right. Moving on. There's a three thumbs up, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So we've got Wheeler Yuta, who came out with Orange Cassidy.
Oh, no. We have a Mox backstage.
That's what we were just talking about.
Were we?
No. Yeah. I thought
that is exactly what we're talking about.
No, we were talking about Britt Baker.
No, we were talking about the Moxley promo.
You're right.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah, that's how really bad need it to is. Stop getting off track.
This is how bad we are.
Look.
We're going to replace 15 minutes of lost content with 30 minutes of content.
Look, while we're here.
At some point, the show is going to be 2 hours long, the same length as the show we're recapping. And just know that will happen eventually.
The show's going to be 8 hours a day. We're just chatting and doing normal shit. The world pass us by.
We're going to be longer because we're not doing commercials.
That's true.
Fair point.
Very true. All right. So, yes. Three thumbs up for the Moxley promo. Moving on to Wheeler Yuta versus Sammy Guevara. Yuta came out with Orange Cassidy. The Butcher and the Blade were watching from some chairs.
Just the Blade and the Bunny.
I'm sorry.
Not the Butcher.
Blade and the Bunny. I'm sorry. Blade and Bunny. I don't know why I said Butcher. Blade
the spirit and of Butcher always looms large.
Yes, he is always there.
I miss him, as we all do.
And yes, it is very weird that a guy is wearing no shirt but a leather apron and a mask sitting in the front row.
But that is the most badass costume.
It is. But if you're just sitting in an audience, you don't even run in. That's weird, man.
It's a little.
Well, here's the thing. There could have been something prior to like the first match. You know what I mean?
Well, like a dark match?
Well, when I was looking online is there were, because I was like, whoa, where are these photos and videos of these people doing on the same night? Apparently, before the quote-unquote show and after the quote-unquote show, there were other matches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They record those for Dark and Dark Elevation. And
oh, okay. So well, on. Then, yeah. Whatever the hell they do it for. It could have been
still,
that.
Even still, if you do an improv show that is, I don't know, everybody is the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. That's the hook of the show is everybody's just Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Do you then go into the audience and watch the next show with your Stay Puft Marshmallow Man costume on?
Yeah, it's called a callback.
I would do it.
Yeah.
You're clearly the wrong people to be talking to. I would
have a notebook and take notes and give notes afterwards. Here's what you guys are missing. Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man costumes. All of them. Could have used them in every scene.
Oh, man.
All right. Now we're really, truly the worst people on earth. We have to move on. Wheeler Yuta versus Sammy Guevara.
Look, I like. Oh, my God. Come on. Come on. Someone has to claim the mantle of being responsible here. It is up in the air.
I'm trying, and oh god, okay.
Look, I want to say that I like Wheeler Yuta like quite a bit. Like, I find him like immediately like pretty exciting and worthy of the push that they're obviously giving him.
Absolutely. I mean, he came out with Orange Cassidy, so that is already huge, right? Because Orange Cassidy is such cachet amongst fans, and so well liked within AEW. So the thing is, though, we've got Sammy Guevara, who I don't understand why they're trying to make him a hero. He, number one, has a smug attitude in the ring. He does that spin move with the tongue out. That is heel all over. He's got heel hair. I can't get over it. It's really starting to bother me. I mean, maybe it's just the front part that to me looks so like offensive. I don't know.
This all checks out.
Before, I used to be like, oh, well, that's a smart way to get me to not like this guy, because like that's what a heel should have, right? Like everything down to even their hair should make me grossed out.
Make you want to punch him.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I still want to punch him. But nothing's changed. So what does that mean? Anyways, Yuta looks great. He actually looks like my friend's husband, kind of.
He looks like Henry Golding. He is, I mean, the first thing I noticed when I saw his thing pop up is like, this match coming up, which confused me. So I'm like, who the hell is he? Why is this an AEW debut? Was like, this is a beautiful man. Oh, my God.
He's very handsome. Shout out to my friend. You did good.
And
married to someone beautiful.
Let's try to emphasize a little bit more, because I think we have time for it. Like who in our lives everyone looks like.
This is relevant information. It's wrestling related. I say it stands.
Stands or stands?
Uh-oh.
Yes.
All right, so I don't like Sammy, but he does have skills. I don't want to give him zero credit.
And he is over. Like, I also agree. I don't like him. I don't like him in this role, but he is over. The fans love him, so.
Yeah, but I really was happy to see Yuta. If, in fact, this is the rub that they're trying to give this new guy, it's his first match that I'm familiar with, and it's a big audience. You know, he's out with Orange Cassidy, and he's performing against someone who right now is, like, really hot. So that's great, you know, for him. So I hope that means that we'll continue to see him. And he was good.
Yeah.
I gave the match a middle.
Oh.
I also middled it because it was, yeah, it was confusing. This guy's debut on Dynamite, and he comes out with the best friend. So clearly, this guy's a face. This mm-hmm. guy's getting a push. And they're putting him against Sammy, who is a face, who is getting a push. And it's weird that they would do that, because basically you're sort of either you're wasting this guy's debut, or he's still a jobber that's going to take a while to build up, in which case you don't put him with the best friends, you know. Mm-hmm. And all of that just sort of like combined. The match was fine. So I just kind of middled it because it was just weird and squishy, and it wasn't clicking for me.
I wonder if something about this might lead towards Sammy going heel again.
It'd be really quick. That'd be a real quick turn.
Well, if they were perceptive of it, not, well, I mean, like, as you say, like, everyone's, but I also, I think, like, you have to continue to temper what you think you're getting from the audience, because, like, people, like, all over the country are going to be loving everything because it's the first time Texas has gotten to go see a show in a long time.
Yeah.
So.
That we know of.
Yo. I hear you. But so I don't know, like, if that was not like the true picture, like that they are more loving being out there than seeing Sammy Guevara or some of the other people, maybe they would make their own determination, like, oh, well, that wasn't really working out. Well, we don't want to force this down their throats if they're not. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, here's the thing. If you're portraying that he's over and the audience is responding that he's over, even the people that are sitting at home being like, I thought he was a heel, will eventually turn, just because everybody's saying it and you're feeling it and you're becoming part of that, you know, crowd. So,
right.
I mean, they're going to keep going with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose.
So then we have Shivani interviewing QT Marshall. I don't have much to say about it other than QT pours a protein drink over Shivani, and I thumbsed it down.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
You say that as if you don't know how this was going.
Look, do I choose to remember, like, hours later in the day, like, what every person decided to do earlier in the day? I don't.
I middled it because I don't like QT, and none of this really worked for me particularly, but there was a little something about the misdirect of, I'm not going to pour this shake on you, and then him pouring the shake on him. It's, you know, it's cheesy heel stuff, and like, that's fine. That's fine. Mm. Middle, it is what it is.
Well, you obviously both are going to remember that I thumbsed this up.
Yes, I still don't understand it.
Well, look, it's not that complicated. Tony Schiavone is really, really good at, like, taking the hit in humiliating situations, and they made him take the hit. Like, he looks really good, like, swallowing the anger and the sadness of getting protein shake all over him.
This was a rainbow.
Yeah. I will thumb up Marvez getting shake on him. Shivani's just the middle.
Mm.
Now, was this one our second rainbow?
This is a double rainbow episode. Yeah, there were two rainbows.
I'm not sure which one was the double part. So I just want to make sure in case anyone was tracking with us.
Yeah, it was Christian versus Matt Hardy was the other rainbow.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Anyway, we now return you to your regularly scheduled rest of the show. Oh, God, I hope this doesn't run too long.
All right, so then we have Penelope Ford versus Yuka Sakazaki.
Yes.
Now, I always love Penelope's braids. Tonight was no exception.
Yeah, it was, and maybe you can impart, like, some insight. This seems like an extremely elaborate, hard to execute braid.
I mean, it's definitely not something I think she does on her own. Someone is helping. I mean, maybe not.
She hires.
It's probably Kip Sabian.
I mean, you know, I don't mind at all, but it's like, I wish I could do that on my own because it looks so freaking cool. And maybe she's one of those girls that can. I know there are girls that can do like French braids on themselves. No, I can't.
You don't call her a girl. If she can do that on her own, she's a woman.
She's a woman. W-O-M-A-N.
She's that bitch. Does it fit there?
Oh, there we go. Okay. That me.
Doesn't sound great coming out of your mouth.
So Yuka Sakazaki is known as the magical girl.
Yeah.
And when she runs out, it's like, holy shit, I love her, love her, love her. I will follow her to the ends of the earth.
Oh, yeah.
She's from like Japanese Joshi promotions.
Yeah. She's in the same promotion as Maki Ito, Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestling.
And everything that she does, all her little, you know, movements and like signaling to the crowd and stuff is so great. And God, it's so good. So also, she must be really strong. Like she's only like 100 pounds, but she's lifting Penelope. So clearly she's got some strength there. But I think maybe Penelope is like technically stronger between them, but still. Did a great job. Yuka does a crazy jump twirl off the top rope towards the end. And she even slipped, but still hit the target and got to pin Penelope. I really liked this whole match. I especially liked it that Yuka was back. Thumbs up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Yuka Sakazaki is like as good as Maki Ito.
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
And so, like, and I haven't had any time to watch like the Japanese stuff lately. So it's really cool that she's over here for a little while, and I really want to save her. Hearing her matches called in all English and everything, because she's just the best.
Yeah,
I love Yuka Sakazaki. The match felt a little rusty. Because she has such a different style.
There
were many points during this match where it just didn't. They weren't meshing. Penelope Ford is definitely getting better, but she's not like a top notch in ring worker, so she wasn't able to sort of adapt to Yuka's style as well. I feel bad about this, but I am middling it.
Wow.
I would like to see better, and I'm looking forward to more Yuka stuff.
Wrestling Grinch, thumbs down. The return of Yuka Sakazaki.
It's a middle.
Well, I mean, it's tantamount to a down when it's this undeserved.
That's fair. There's a promo for Rampage, I don't know if it's different from previous ones because I tend to gloss over them, but I was watching this one, and one of their taglines is "less distraction, more action." And I'm curious if that means fewer storylines because fewer people are like running in and doing stuff.
I think what it means is that they promise to come into your home and silence anything or anyone that is keeping you from enjoying the show.
Wow. That's a big ask.
That Rampage commercial looks fucking amazing. They really did a good job of selling that.
It'll be interesting to see really what it is and how it distinguishes. That'll be fun to find out.
Speaking of commercials, though, I just have to note there was a commercial for a movie called Old. I laughed my ass off because I guess they age a year for every 30 minutes and they're like freaking out because they're getting old. And I'm like, ha ha, joke's on you, youth.
Yeah, this is what you're afraid of. Well, get used to it, kid. Yeah. You millennial,
you have way
Gen
more years
Z.
Being old than you ever have being young.
Well, at first, it's a good deal because they go from being little annoying children to being like relatively grown, but still young and vital. And then it starts getting bad from there. A return, to greatness for M. Night Shyamalan? Question mark.
It's a return to something.
Yeah. It's what the Lost series was supposed to be.
boy.
I generally don't pile on to Shyamalan hate because I do think he's a really good craftsman who just makes some really weird and usually often bad choices. But like, so I, every time something comes out, I'm like, man, I hope this one's good.
Yeah, well, he certainly has great like abilities if they just happen to hit the right target. But he can definitely mess up whether it's his own idea or even like if he's a gun for hire. He like I don't know though he's always nailed those, but when he's on, he's really very good.
Can you guys hear my cat purring?
Yes.
If we could, it would get taken out in post. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Oh.
All
right, fine.
I'll add in some purring in post.
Good idea.
All right. So then we have the match of the night. Darby Allin versus Ethan Page in a coffin match. To win, you have to put your opponent in the coffin and close the lid. I mean, sounds silly, right?
I think it'd be funny if a coffin match was you had to match up two coffins that are alike out of a huge number of coffins that are mostly different.
Wow, you really need to stop playing match three games on your phone, Calder. Just saying, it's taken over your life.
You were obviously on set doing nothing for hours yesterday.
I can stop anytime.
That being said, if AEW releases a match three game, I'm going to fucking buy it.
Like, that's my favorite. Yeah, I'm doing it. Okay. So anyways, the coffin was brought out by some dudes all in black.
We just call them druids. That's just the general term. Although I will say I loved that it looked exactly like when you have a sketch team that's like, okay, who's got black shirts? Okay, you all wear your shirt, black shirts, black pants, whatever you have. So, like, it's mostly jeans, but some people have, like, a button-up. Some people got the Mandarin collar. Some people got, you know, just a polo shirt that they just, like, blacked out the little white logo on the breast.
All right. So, we've got...
No, that's... I'm sorry. That one is specifically for me and my experience.
Look, everyone...
I apologize.
Everyone can relate to jokes about the fashion choices of non-performing sketch team members in
Look,
Los Angeles.
For regional theater. It also counts for high school, a drama club. It's really everybody that gets it.
The uncontacted tribes of the Amazon know this story.
When the match started, Darby had all kinds of clothes on, and you know that's not what he normally does. So as he's taking his clothes off, we notice he's wearing like this, looks like a backpack, but it's like a metal plate on his back. And so he hits Ethan right away with the metal back and then like gets rid of it. And I'm like, hey, if that's your thing for the night, why not keep it on? But I guess because it would end up injuring him more than helping him. But anyway.
Also, it looks like one of those disposable turkey pans that you buy for Thanksgiving.
Whoa,
so, like,
you're throwing those away?
Just get those out of the way and pretend that, like, just move on.
All right. Well, I thought it kind of looked real, but Scorpio
Well, they
Sky-
said steel, and I was like, that is not
steel. They also call the stairs steel, but you know those are aluminum, you know? Just like bleachers, aluminum bleachers, you know.
Oh, I don't know about those because they seem real heavy, and you don't want you know people falling through those as they step up.
Well, I would love it if they were actual like the garbage can metal, where like they would truly instantly crumble under the slightest pressure.
So Scorpio Sky at one point was hiding in the coffin and threw Darby. Darby hit his knee on the stairs, the metal stairs, and then Sting comes out and takes on Scorpio Sky, and they go through the crowd, and people fucking loved that shit. Ethan was doing something with the turnbuckles. He unhooked the turnbuckle, like the rope from the – it was really crazy. But Darby and Ethan actually go out from the ring into the crowd, similar to Scorpio and Sting. And I mean – people loved it, and they were getting hurt by real shit. There was no ring stuff, no ropes, no like possibly a springy floor.
Watching both of them, like Darby, And obviously he's very durable, but one of his gifts is that it looks like it fucking hurts when he lands on something, and you feel it viscerally as it's happening. Like, oh god!
The question is he durable or does he just not scream?
I don't know, man. I will say that I generally don't bother focusing on picture in picture. Usually, I'll look over once in a while and just make sure that nothing wild's happening, and it never is. But I was watching this picture in picture because
it was fucked up.
Whew, there was some brutality, and then they come back and like, hey, no, let's replay a thing. I'm like, you didn't even replay the stuff that was real bad. Oh Lord.
The things that I went for the very most in this, and boy, there was so much good. Like there was a lot of quasi deathmatch stuff happening. But also just really silly stuff. When he's dismantling the ring ropes, in order to fish hook, so he's talking to the hook.
Yeah. He's saying something to it. Bananas.
What does he have to say to the hook? The hook's not party to.
He's like, Hook, I know you're normally with Team Taz, but tonight you got to be with.
Teresa says a lot of things to Hook on a regular basis.
Tonight you got to be with Men of the Year, okay?
It was that was really goofy. And then it really is almost chilling to me to see the ring hook be in someone's mouth.
Yeah. So when they come back into the ring, Ethan brings the stairs in there also, but. At one point, Ethan takes the rope from the ring and he puts the steel hook into Darby's mouth. Oh, wait. First, he put it on his chain and then yanks it. And of course, it breaks Darby's chain. And then he puts it in his mouth. But it was really obvious that it wasn't even pulling on his cheek at all. Darby had to physically lift himself up to kind of get in to make it look like it was touching any part of his mouth. So that was a little weird because, I totally would have bought it because of just knowing how fucked up that is,
Yeah.
But, yeah. And Ethan does this thing, too, where he smiles and then puts his finger in his cheek dimple, like Shirley Temple or something. God, I love that so much.
It's great. when Ethan was doing this mock choking thing at Darby, it was the most hysterical thing.
Yeah. So eventually these two guys are hurting each other and they eventually tumble out of the ring, but both in the coffin. So now they're both in the coffin fighting. And it's so funny because depending on, they were punching each other back and forth. And the crowd was either saying yay or boo, depending on who was punching. So it was yay, boo, yay, boo. That was great. That's what crowds are for.
It's like the best improv game.
Then Ethan throws Darby onto the stairs. Darby starts gouging out his eyes again. Darby with his skateboard hitting Ethan Page, and then Page is in the coffin. So Darby shuts the lid. And I was like, well, that's kind of funny. That's really anticlimactic. That's so stupid. But then Darby gets up and coffin drops onto the coffin.
I don't even understand.
Falls right through. And I was like, Ethan had to have gotten hurt. At least
either of them. Both of them. That's insane to do a coffin drop onto a coffin, because it's not you're watching that one match where MJF pushes Jericho off the cage, and people are like, oh, that was just cardboard, or that was just padding, or whatever. You can argue that all day you want. This was a box of wood, and sure, make it soft wood so you break through. There's still a person underneath that wood.
Yeah.
And there's no, they crack through. There's no padding there. It's not padded underneath it. I mean, holy shit.
Where it cracks, it could have really cut into him,
Both men there are just bug nutty insane.
Look, they were very well protected by the power of prayer.
The power of Christ compels you to not kill yourself.
It was a big thumbs up. This was more, I mean, I had high expectations because, you know, I like these guys. I especially like Ethan Page. But it really exceeded my expectations.
It was I want to be clear that when I upped this match, I used six ups. So that's where I was at.
Okay.
It gets bonus points for me because coffin matches tend to kind of suck, and I'm not generally a fan. But this was well and above my expectations, and boy, yeah, especially that last spot. That's just that's insane.
It was in a match that had a number of concerning spots that were like, are you sure that you should have done that? And that one really, really, and I was just tickled so much by the kind of the intellectual level of it, of coffin dropping a coffin.
Like many of your sketches.
Yes, it is exactly
coffin
like
and a coffin in a coffin.
A lot of, yeah. Well, see, that's where I would have. That's the only thing is that they didn't go quite far enough.
Because like Ethan Page wasn't actually having an asthma attack in the coffin, so he was coffin in the coffin.
He
didn't drop our branded coffin drops before he coffin dropped into the coffin.
Like, ideally, like, Darby would be wearing some kind of a coffin suit. I don't know what that would be like. But you really want 3 degrees.
All right.
Yeah.
This has gone on far too long. This is an 84% show, which under our new rubric is worth watching.
Worth watching.
Mm-hmm. Not a must watch. I will say I did my own separate scoring because I wanted to see, like, how my thumbs came out, and it was a 50% show for me.
Wow.
I would still say watch some stuff. I mean, I think the coffin match is amazing. I think the IWGP match at the top is great, and there's some good stuff in here, but like there was I did the math. But that's why there's three of us, so that we
if
can
it
all
wasn't you know. For you, Calder and I would have a wrestling podcast called Everything's Great.
The Supreme AE double back court rules 2-1 in favor of the show being good. The scathing dissent penned by Justice Chan.
We are the Supreme Court of Wrestling Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye. Bye.